Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 3rd day of August, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the... Oh, I'm Nick Francesco.
Yeah, I was going to say...
I'm new at this. You gotta forgive me. I'm new at this. Whoa. At 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you some stuff. I don't know
Throw
what it is.
Throw him off his game.
Figure
much?
It out. I know, right?
But August. What happened to summer?
Exactly. That's just it. Suddenly, August. All right. So if you're an iOS 12 user. If you're an iOS user, you better be listening. Most iPhone and iPad owners are running iOS 12. And that's a good thing because you're getting a speedier experience with as many patched bugs and vulnerabilities as possible. It's especially important, too, given that Google researchers recently disclosed 6 serious iOS vulnerabilities that Apple fixed up in the iOS 12.4 release earlier this month. The problem? Well, it's twofold. First, there are... What?
I thought it was they fixed 5 of them. The 6th one isn't fixed yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. First, there are still plenty of people who aren't using iOS 12.4 for whatever reason, and likely not even iOS 12. Though Apple's own statistics don't break down specific iOS versions, the company showed that roughly 13% of all iPhone and iPads purchased within the last 5 years are not running iOS 12. Given how many devices Apple sells, which is well over a billion iPhones alone between 2016 and 2018, 13% is a lot more devices than that number might imply at first glance. Second, one of these interactionless bugs, as identified by Google researchers, was not even fully fixed in iOS 12.4. They're described as interactionless because all they require an attacker to do is send you a message. And that can be a text message, multimedia message, iMessage, email, or a visual voice message. Voicemail. Look at this message and it'll execute whatever unpleasant code the attacker has concocted. In 4 of the 6 published vulnerabilities. That's right. Out of the 6, 4 of them are interactionless. All you have to do is open a message. In the other 2, it simply reads files off your iPhone or iPad. Oh, wait. All 6 are interactionless. 4 of them... will run code. The other 2 will just steal all your files. Here's hoping you don't have anything incriminating or super secret on your device. Thankfully, you're protected from 5 of these 6 vulnerabilities by updating to iOS 12.4, but you shouldn't have to wait for us to convince you to check for iOS updates. Make a recurring calendar event every 3 months that says update my phone in large, annoying text, or pull up settings, general, software update constantly because you love living on the bleeding edge. Heck, starting in iOS 12, you can even enable automatic updates, though as Apple notes, you still might have to manually update your device from time to time. If you're holding out because you love the look and feel of your older version of iOS, you have to weigh that against the possibility that an attacker might come after your unpatched device. Are the odds low? Sure. Would I want to risk it just to have a slower iPhone? No. So is your iPhone up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And of course, you can also join us in the forums. That's pretty easy to do. Just go to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right and under fascinating stuff, you will see the forums. The first forum is the show discussion forum, and currently the first thing in the show discussion is 3 August 19 update to iOS 12.4 right now. And as Steve said, and as I said in this story, 5 of the 6 vulnerabilities were patched. The 6th one kind of still isn't, so you still have to be pretty careful of what you open. I know that everybody believes that Apple products don't get viruses. That's wrong.
Wrong.
And that's particularly wrong when it comes to something like this. There are a number of issues that these products have had, and you need to keep on top of it. You need to be aware, and you absolutely need to be up to date on everything that you do.
Unfortunately, most Apple devices are set to auto update. The problem becomes a lot of people run their devices so full, there isn't space to download the update.
Right.
And so if that's the case, if you update from your computer, then it doesn't need the space on the device.
But it does need the space on the computer.
On the computer, which most people have more space on the computer. So you need less free space on the phone. But if you're running your phone at zero free, it probably won't even work that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
Forget it.
Exactly right. We tend to think, oh, it's 128 gigs, so I can fill that right up. You really can't. You need to leave a certain amount free, and I suspect that something in the order of 12 to 14 gig is
it. The biggest problem, bigger problem is the earlier devices that were 8 gig or 16 gig. Even my 32 gig iPad is almost full all the time.
Yeah, right. Right, 30, right.
32 is not as much as it used to be.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, more and more programs, you know, you want them to do more and more. Well, with that comes that they need to take up more and more space.
Right.
To accomplish that.
Right.
So what might have been a smaller program to begin with when it first came out now could be almost double in size because they've added that many more features.
Right.
One of the games I play keeps asking to download a 2 gigabyte update pack. I said, what, again?
Yeah, right.
Another?
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget things like Chromebooks, which have, you know, 16 gig SSD cards in them. And people are, well, I can't use. Everything is in the cloud.
Yeah.
You have if you're using Google's format and saving word processing and spreadsheet and presentation files in the cloud in Google's format, you have unlimited storage.
And even if you
don't know how you get better than that.
But even for the folks that, I don't trust the cloud. All right, well, then you can hook up an external hard drive.
Right.
You want the comfort of having the files right there instead of trusting the cloud, because I had one gentleman arguing, well, I don't trust the cloud. Then fine, get yourself a portable external hard drive. You can hook it up to the side through a USB port and put all your files off to the side. Oh, you can do that? Yeah, that's what I just told you.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, and having a backup. One of the things I really, really like about Google is they have Google Takeout. So I can go to takeout.google.com or whatever it is anytime I want, and download all of my data.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's sitting in the cloud, but I can download a zip file backup.
Anytime you want.
Anytime I want of whatever I want. And I do that about once a month. And nowadays it's big enough that I burn it to a DVD and save it there. But and it does take, I have to be honest, multiple zip files.
Speaking of Chromebooks, I was glad that I was able to get mine back up and running. It was just the power pack. Remember, mine had died.
Yeah.
Yeah. Due to three little fur balls that like to chew on cords.
Right.
Something about electronic cords. We see that rodents especially, you know, rabbits and mice and...
Puppies.
well, not a rodent. Maybe.
Yeah.
Something about that electromagnetic field it generates, they like to chew on it.
Yeah, so mine shorted the one out, and I'm thinking,
Yeah, right.
Well, it cost me all $20. I ordered it on Amazon. I love it. I ordered it on a Saturday.
Yep.
And they go, at first, originally, they're saying, all right, it's going to be Friday before I'm going to get it. Oh, okay, that's fine. All of a sudden, I get an update. Yeah, it'll be delivered by the end of Monday.
Yeah.
I said, can't ask
anybody. Well, we have a local warehouse. And if it's in that warehouse, you get it that much faster.
I've started seeing a lot of next-day delivery estimates when I'm going through my Amazon stuff. I'm just waiting for same day. If you order early enough in the morning, it could come the same day.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
So it showed up for, sometime in the afternoon. My wife hooked it up. She called me a little later on. Yeah, it's up and running. Yes.
Yeah.
I've just become too dependent on that Chromebook for, you know, getting to stuff and doing a lot of stuff because I don't have to worry about, as we've touted before, don't worry about viruses, spyware, or anything else. It's right. Just there. So $20 was well worth it, and I just keep the cord up out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. You have two choices. Yeah. You can train the dogs, or the dogs can train you.
I
and
just
they've trained you.
Well, what I'm doing is I wound up, because I have the side of the desk, just putting three little hooks that I can just dangle it off of that. If I got to move it, I can quick grab the cord and go. But I just dangle it there instead of down on the floor.
Right. Nice.
It's almost sad to how many people bring their computers into our shop because they won't turn on and the battery's dead. Well, I tried charging it. Well, was the little light on? Well, I didn't notice. Well, and it's very annoying. So on the older Macs, there was a little light on the power cord that mm-hmm. would let you know that it was on.
That it's charging.
And, you know, it's amber when it's charging and green when it's not. Usually fully charged when it doesn't charge. But and so we're a little sad that you don't get that charging light anymore. Mm-hmm. But you do get a chirp when you plug in your power cord.
Yep.
So, yeah, your AC adapter is bad. You forgot about the caller we have.
No, I didn't forget. I was just, we were chit-chatting about other things.
There's your call list.
we should go to the phone. Our next caller is John from Gates, New York. Hiya, John, what's up?
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm trying to figure out how to attach a Google document to a text message on Android. It asked me complete the action using, like, email and stuff, but I don't see anywhere where I can send it in a text.
You probably can't. Text can't do attachments. What you would have to do is copy the document and then paste it into the text program. But even then, it depends on how long it is because pure text is limited to 140 characters, but many systems will allow larger text messages since then. What you probably can do is text a link to that document. So you can share that document with somebody else via their email address, and then text them a link that they can open with. Although Nick is now finding maybe you can attach. That would be an Android message, not a text message, right?
Right.
Nick is
right.
Going through his thing. Yeah. So if you send it as an Android message, that might work.
Right. So here's the thing. If you open up the Android message system, I don't know which one you're using. It depends. My wife got caught by this the other day. Somehow, all of a sudden, her Samsung phone decided it was going to use the Samsung messaging app instead of the Google messaging app, which actually has all our contacts in it.
I see.
But if you're using the real Google messaging app, when you go to send a text message, there's the place where you actually type in that text message. Next right. to that, on the left, is a little black circle with a camera in it and stuff. And to the left of that is a plus sign.
So the camera is where you add add a picture.
Right. But if you hit the plus sign, you right. get to do things like emojis and all kinds of stuff. But at the bottom of that list, you can attach a file.
Oh.
Now, that, I believe, is only files. No, you can do it pretty much anything. Listen, why are we listening to music?
Okay.
Really?
Oh, I'm sorry, my bad.
Well, are you living in the past?
Yes.
Yes, apparently you are. All right. So
you started me off earlier, but I'm thinking old mode that we got to do it at 20 after.
Right.
No,
it's
30,
no, sorry.
It's 39.
So at the point here is you can click that plus button, go all the way down to attach file.
Okay.
And you can, theoretically at least, attach a file. Now, I'm about to attach a small file and send it to Steve, and we'll see if he actually gets it.
Okay.
If I can find a small file. I don't write small files, apparently. Yeah. Oh, yeah, here's this is sort of small.
Yeah, I'm on the Google Docs web page, and it looks like I can only share a link to an email address.
Right, and that's actually fine, too, because they can then they can open that link, and that'll work. But if you want to attach, I think it has to be, it looks like it's got to be something that's downloaded to your phone. Because I can click on it, but nothing seems to happen.
Okay.
So it may be that it only works. Yeah,
with
I can't click on it. It only works with a link.
Okay. I'll try that.
Sorry.
But if it is a short enough document, you can do a copy and paste.
Right.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's another option. Well, thank you for that bit of information. I appreciate it.
Absolutely our pleasure. Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's Google gives you a lot of options. There's a lot of flexibility in what they do.
I can tweet a link.
You can tweet a link. You can put it on Facebook
or email,
and you can email it.
Yeah.
And that's but you can't SMS it. And if he wants to do is SMS it, then he's got to I guess download the document to his phone first and then send it. Or I guess I don't know how else to do that. There's also the share. If you've actually got it as a document, you can do it the other way around as well. So you can open up that document, or not open it, but point to it. And then if you've got the Files app, which you do, I mean it's built into the phone, you can take a document and click on it, and then click the share and send the file, in this case called send file, and I can share it to Drive, or I can share it through Messages or Google Voice. I can Android beam it to somebody. I can send it through Duo. I can do whatever I want to it. So there's plenty of options available and multiple ways to do the same thing. But you just have to know how to do them. It's the trick of knowing how to do it, as opposed to can it be done.
It looks like there's a plugin for Google Sheets to send text messages from Sheets, but I don't see one for Docs.
That's amazing. I can actually send a text message from Google Sheets.
Oh, here's one for Google Docs too. It's an add-on for Chrome, it looks like.
For Chrome or
for Google Docs?
For Google Docs, yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty cool.
I'm trying to see if it sends the actual document or just a link.
Either way, they get the data eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, you click open, and if you're on a Google phone, it opens it in the Docs app, and if you're on an iPhone, it opens it in the web. Very cool. Very, very cool. Yeah, Google doesn't seem to be missing many tricks when it comes to this stuff.
Yep.
They're integrating everything.
And by having an open API that other programmers can access, hundreds of things that Google didn't think to add in the first place have been added by third parties.
And it's just adding to their popularity. Using Google to do this, use Google to do that. It's becoming your one source because he opens it up.
Right, right.
And, you know, doesn't sit there, well, you got to pay us this fee or that fee. It's literally open source.
Right.
And
a million people are adding things to it all the time. It's quite amazing. And that's one of the things that's put them ahead of Apple and Amazon.
Yeah, it's and place separated
and like
them.
Because they make it open, and they allow anybody to write. The APIs are published. There's 1,000 pages of API. So yeah, it's complex, but it's because you can do so much. And if you're a programmer, APIs don't intimidate you.
Yeah, so, I was gonna say, you sit there and you go, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm used to this or that. Yeah, I know. Okay, get me to the meat of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it works. And they're just winning all over the place with that stuff. It's the same with them and with Firefox, the ability to create extensions,
mm-hmm.
add-ons that you can add on to the browser.
To make your life a little easier.
To make your life a little easier. It's great. Can you do that with Safari add-ons?
Yeah. Okay. They call them extensions in Safari.
Right.
It's not that big a market for them, though. When you're a programmer, you have to decide who you're going to program for.
Right.
And you've got Chrome and Firefox and Edge and Safari.
Right.
Well, Chrome has got a 80% market share now?
80%+, yeah.
We'll start with Chrome.
Yeah, exactly.
And then maybe Firefox that makes up the next, 20%.
And
now that Edge, they're switching Edge to be based on Chromium instead of their own engine.
Right.
That probably means that Chrome extensions will work in the new Edge.
Yes.
Because it's Chromium underneath.
They've already said that that's part of the plan.
Yeah.
As to whether that happens day one or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Let's wait and see.
That you can even download Microsoft Edge for Mac because it's based on Chromium, which runs on the Mac.
right. Well, and that's the thing.
And you may want to run other browsers when you are developing a website because you want to. And that's part of the problem. You need to see what your website looks like in every browser because every browser is different.
Right.
Well, Microsoft finally admitted that there's so much hassle in writing a website that also works in every browser that we're going to just use the same thing Chrome does. So when you write your browser for Chrome, it'll work fine in Edge too.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Duh.
And you're right, because Safari is not cross-platform.
Used to be.
It used to be, and it's not now, and that makes it less appealing to programmers, to developers.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it puts them to the bottom of the list if they're ever going to develop an application for that.
Right.
Yeah, you have to
Your priorities are going to shift to the, like you said, the 80%. I want to get the best bang for my buck. If I'm paying these programmers to create this, I want to hit it for the biggest bang for my buck.
That's
not,
exactly
something
right.
that's only going to get me 2 or 3%.
Your Mac only instead of cross-platform, which was the whole goal of the web anyway, is that it doesn't matter what OS you're running, your web browser will look at this web page.
Yep.
Right.
But then every company starts trying to extend. I just read something about this, too. Companies are adding features to their own browser that haven't been ratified as new features yet. And so still even some companies need to, when they're making a website, have to allow for the differences in the way some browsers interpret some commands that they've added that haven't been ratified as an actual HTML spec yet.
Right. We're seeing that more and more. Google's doing some weird things now, though, to Chrome, the Chrome browser, and I'm not sure they're a good idea. But we'll see. I guess we'll see.
Time will tell.
Yeah, that's how that works. But yeah, it's to go back to this idea. We only have about a minute, but to go back to this idea, the Apple's operating systems, whether it's iOS or Mac OS or TV OS or any OS, are no more secure than anybody else's. No less secure, but no more secure. One of the reasons that the Mac and Linux are less prone to viruses is what we were just talking about with browsers. Fewer people run them, so they're a smaller target, so people aren't going to write as many viruses to go against them. But that doesn't mean there are none. If you're a Linux user, you definitely should be running an antivirus and malware checker. And the same is true of a Mac. You need to be running these things. You need to be aware that these things are important. And when a security update comes out for your operating system, run it. Make sure you have it. All right, now we're actually going to take a real break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik, Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36, we all forget who we are.
I'm just got a chance to test the audio feed, and the audio in the YouTube stream is terrible.
nobody said anything? Tisk, tisk.
I don't have the I don't have the chat open.
Neither do I.
Okay, yep. Chat is open. Thank you, View 52. I just found out that the audio is overmodulated.
Yeah.
Oops.
In the meantime, while you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free at 1-800-790-0415, I will read the news. Apple workers have stopped listening to Siri queries worldwide. Apple plans to bring back human reviews of Siri voice recordings at some unspecified date, but the company said it will only review them when customers specifically opt into the practice. Separately, Google recently confirmed that it paused human reviews of Google Assistant queries worldwide. Apple's decision to stop having humans listen to Siri queries followed a report last week that contractors who review Siri's recordings for accuracy heard private discussions and even sexual encounters. We are committed to delivering a great Siri experience while protecting user privacy, Apple said. While we conduct a thorough review, we are suspending Siri grading globally. Additionally, as part of a future software upgrade, users will have the ability to choose to participate in grading. Apple calls the human review of Siri recordings grading. A German investigation into Google began after a Google contractor leaked 1,000 voice recordings to VRT News, a news organization run by a public broadcaster in the Flemish region of Belgium. VRT News reviewed the recordings and was able to identify some of the people who were recorded. VRT News also said that 153 of the 1,000 recordings it listened to were conversations that should never have been recorded, and during which the command okay followed by the word Google were clearly not given. Shortly after we learned about the leaking of confidential Dutch audio data, we paused language reviews of the assistant to investigate. This paused reviews globally, Google said. Google said you must opt in to have your audio recording stored to your account, and voice and audio activity is not required to use the Google Assistant. You can turn off storing audio data to your Google account completely, or choose to auto-delete data after every 3 months or 18 months. The ability to turn off storage of voice activity can be found in the Google Activity controls. Google didn't say when it will resume human reviews of Google Assistant recordings. However, Google was ordered by German authorities to stop human evaluations of Google Assistant queries for at least 3 months. Amazon also has humans reviewing Alexa recordings, which are stored indefinitely unless customers delete them. Late yesterday, they also said that they were going to suspend human review for now. Worry about what your smart assistant will hear? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
These reports have been going back for months, if not years, on most of them.
Right.
And what was a little interesting this time is that there was a salacious headline, I think it was in the Register, who are known for their salacious headlines,
yeah.
One of the contractors reported hearing a sex act.
Yeah.
So now that made big news, and now it's going around the news again.
Well, one of the things that they discovered is that not only does Siri listen to you, but Siri listens to you through your watch.
Which is Siri-enabled, yeah.
Which is Siri-enabled.
Your watch, so your AirBuds, your computer, your phone, everything.
Right, so yeah. If most of that stuff is in the living room, but your watch is in the bedroom,
yep.
There you are.
It's not supposed to engage. Well, all the assistants are not supposed to engage unless you say the trigger word. But we've all had cases where it does anyway. It thought it heard the trigger word. Mm-hmm. So we want it to be smarter. And the way you do that is by listening to it and training it better. But we don't want you to listen to it either.
Yeah, right. You know what? How do you have one of these things in your home? And suddenly you're surprised that the thing you have listening into you is, in fact, listening into you.
With Google and Apple, you have to say two words
right.
to trigger it. With Amazon, you only say one word,
right.
which I guess is easier, but it does probably mean there's more false triggering.
And with the Amazon device, the Alaska,
yeah,
as Dennis calls it, with the Alaska device, you can change the trigger word. Can you change it on Siri?
No.
You cannot. I know you cannot change it on Google, and that's because it's branded.
Yeah.
You know, well, they want you to use right. the word Google every time you listen,
yep.
so that it reinforces you're with them.
Now, I can almost see, you know, the word Google is kind of unique enough that it wouldn't be accidentally heard.
Right.
But the A word that Amazon uses is a real name. So heaven forbid your name is that. You can never own an Amazon device.
And
you can change it to Echo,
right,
which is a fairly common word.
Right.
But with Siri, I wouldn't think that's a common enough word. But it's a similar phonetic structure to too many other words. So that's right. It accidentally gets triggered all the time.
Because you could sit there and say, seriously?
Yeah. So what I've done is I only have mine on my phone, and it's off on all my other devices. And when my case is closed, which it always is unless I'm using it, it won't activate at all. So I was sending you a text message when I was stuck in traffic this morning. Stay off 490 between Penfield and Fairport and Pittsford. I don't know if it's clear by now, but about an hour ago, it was not.
Isn't somebody having a day, canal day or some kind of day?
Park Ave is today.
But Park Ave is
this
Park
was just
Ave
construction. So I'm trying to do a voice message to tell you I'm stuck in traffic. And it kept saying, here's how the traffic looks. And I want to yell at the phone, I'm stuck in the traffic. I know what it looks like.
Yeah. I got a thing the other day. I was using my Google Maps to get somewhere, and suddenly this thing pops up and says, there's a delay. Oh, yes, there's a delay ahead. Is it still there? And I could hit yes or no on my phone. I did not because I was driving at the time and trying not to be hit by the idiot who needed to be in my lane at that exact moment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that happens.
You want to talk, see impatient people. You should see them around my street right now. With that 104 bridge being out.
Yeah.
I mean, the traffic.
So much traffic is going down. Yeah, 590, turning on Empire and going back up 590.
And they get off. They also try to get off ahead of time,
yep.
Come up Culver Road
so they can
to Empire, and then come up, down. Yeah. So it's usually backed right up to my house.
That that just changes my afternoon plans. Thank you for reminding me that. I was going to go to visit Matthew in Webster there and get my car inspected, which. We're in a new month. Check your inspection date.
Yes.
Mine expired.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to Webster today.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not bad today. I mean, you know, the traffic's
probably
light.
Weekends aren't too
no,
bad.
The weekends
yeah.
are not bad. No. Matter of fact, we went right down the street to hop on and shoot on over. No, it's, if anything, more traffic is headed towards Park F.
Right, right.
To downtown.
Right. So that's it. That's today. If you're at the Park Avenue Festival, well, you're probably not listening to us, and if you are, I hope that you're enjoying yourself. But yeah, speaking of the Alaska wake word, I met a waitress whose name is Alaska, and I jokingly said, "Do you have an Amazon Echo?" And she said, "It's the best thing I ever bought. When my mother comes over to yell at me, it frustrates her so much she leaves."
Ooh, very apropos.
Very cool. She said, "I'm thinking of getting another one for the other room."
Or send her mother one, so then when her mother's yelling at her on the phone, the one at her home will also be triggered.
Yep, yep. And we're seeing, to be serious about it, we're seeing a lot of people buy these assistant devices, smart speakers, for their parents.
Yeah.
You know, there's a commercial for it now, but I've been seeing it for a long time. People who buy them and training their parents to say things like play this radio station or
call me. I like the ones with Neil Patrick Harris, his mom, and all the other famous moms.
Yeah.
And I love the one when his kid comes out at the end where his mom's, "You look like you've lost weight." "Thank you." "Yeah." "What's wrong with my hair?" And the kid runs out and says, "His hair is great." Yeah.
Yeah. The big thing about these things is that's an Echo show. And they're not cheap.
Yeah.
However, if you have a generation, I believe 7 or 8 Fire tablet, it has an Echo show mode.
Oh, neat.
And if you have an 8, you can even buy a cradle that permanently, that when you put it in the cradle, it goes into show mode.
Yeah.
And you can buy those for $50.
Yep. Wasn't that the one that they wanted you to put in the bedroom that would comment on your outfit every morning?
Yes. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
How do I look today, Amazon?
You look crappy. It. I'm going to buy this stuff for you.
Yeah, right.
What's your credit card? Oh, I have your credit card number. I don't need that.
Yeah, I don't need that. Never mind. Actually, you can ask any of the smart speaker of the assistants, how do I look today, or how am I doing today, or how am I, or what do you think, or whatever, and they will give you. They'll never be honest. They'll give you some sort of positive. Yeah, feedback.
A canned.
There's some snarky answers in Siri that are kind of funny.
Right.
Ask her to marry you. That was a good one.
Well, yes, but I'm you know, specifically when we're talking about how do I look, it's never going to say, well, as good as you can.
Yeah. Or, no, you look a little heavy in there.
Good try.
There used to be one, and I'm mad they took it out. You can ask Siri about movies. You know, what's this movie about? And if you asked her about 2001, A Space Odyssey, it said something like, you know, it's about an intelligence assistant on a trip to, you know, to Jupiter, and the humans mess up and do all these bad things.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Eric from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Eric. What's up?
Yeah, gents. I just was going to follow up on that question you had about attachments. How do you attach a voice message to an email? I'll tell you what happened. I called a national radio show about a question about finance, and she answered. I sent an email. Right. But I found out that she had played it on the air because I got the email, and I don't know how I found it by accident. It's on my voice or whatever, MP3 thing, and there was one on that I didn't recognize, and I played it, and it was a segment that she had, was her segment on the air, and that got attached, and I wanted to know how to do that, if I could, just for general purposes.
What do you use for an email client?
Pardon me?
What is your email client? Is it Thunderbird or Gmail on the browser, or
what? No, generally it's Yahoo.
Okay. In Yahoo, one of the things you can do is attach a file. And so you already need to have the voice file on your computer. It's usually an MP3.
That's the trick, is getting the voicemail message from the phone to your computer.
Right. So if it's already on your computer, you can do it that way. If you're using Yahoo on your phone, it's fairly similar. You say attach a file, and then it opens up a file browser. You go find that file on your phone, and I can't tell you where it is because depending on what app it is, it could be anywhere. And then you just click on it, tap on it, and it attaches, and you should be on your way. But
on the Apple phone, there's a little So when you bring up your voicemail, there's a little send button,
right?
And so you can send a voicemail if I can hit the right button. As a message, as an attachment, I can AirDrop it. So that may be in your phone in the voicemail app. When you're listening to a voicemail, there may be a send button right in that voicemail.
No, I've never seen that. So would you have to have your go to the voice section and record that first and then do the email, and would it search for that file?
Well, in the voicemail itself, you can save the voicemail.
I don't think he's talking about voicemail. He wants to create a file and send it to someone else. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, with a voicemail attachment.
Right. So what
So with the voicemail attachment. So it starts by getting that voicemail unattached to the phone and have it as an audio recording in a file.
I'm sorry. Are we actually talking about voicemail in the fact that in the sense that someone sent you a voicemail and you want to forward it to someone else?
No, this is just an answer that I found out I was screwing around on my MP3, and I didn't recognize this one, so I played it. And
okay,
she said, here's a letter from Ed, right. Blah, blah, blah.
So,
and I thought to myself, geez, how would I do that?
So what you're asking is you've got an MP3 file, and you want to send it to someone else.
No, I just want to make one myself and send it to you, for example.
Okay, same thing. You make it by recording it either on your phone with a voice app,
right,
or on your computer with a voice app. And now you've got an MP3 file on your computer or on your phone, and sending it works the same way.
Okay, gotcha. Good. That's what threw me.
Yeah.
Okay, gents. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
I guess I got confused because he kept saying voicemail.
Right. But he didn't mean voicemail. He meant a voice message, an MP3 file. Mm. So what we know is that you can, of course, originally email was designed strictly for text messages. So was, well, text messaging.
Yeah.
But as time has evolved and as our needs and abilities have evolved, we are now doing more and more stuff in the non-text arena. So you can attach stuff to an email, and most email clients make it fairly easy to do if you know where to click. And most phones make it fairly easy to do if you know where to click. But you have to know where to click.
And the phone system extended text messaging into multimedia messaging, MMS. But the encryption, not encryption, encoding and compression routines they use are weighted toward making the file small, not making it good quality. So we run into problems with people trying to text a video between platforms. You know, if you go Mac to Mac, it uses the messaging app and doesn't go through the phone system and works fine. If you go Android to Android, it uses the Google app. But if you're trying to actually send a text message or an MMS message, it'll convert it down to 3GPP,
right,
which is horrible quality, but really small. And so if you're trying to go from an Apple to an Android, it's going to send it as an MMS through the phone system and compress the heck out of it. So you want to use a different messaging platform like Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, you know, Signal, an actual messaging app rather than the text messaging, because that doesn't handle audio and video files very well.
Google has published a new standard, yet another standard, for that sort of SMS messaging.
And pick any of the dozen messaging apps that Google has.
Right. And so that will work. And so you could have that on your phone, on your iPhone. But Apple has also said that they're going to support that at some point, and I don't know when that is. But yeah, so you can pretty much send anything to anybody. The trick is getting it there in a reasonable amount of time. And of course, for text messages, they're the lowest priority on every phone system. So
with
it's
no guarantee that
first.
It will actually get through.
Right. There is no guarantee it will get through. And so, if you know, being able to send an SMS message from Google Sheets is great, assuming it gets there.
Yeah.
I send out a quote of the day twice a day. And half the time, my wife gets it, my daughter gets it, and I don't get it. And I'm the one sending it, and who knows why.
Oh, okay.
Why.
Group messaging adds another complication
and
layer.
And that's another complication. Exactly.
And if one person in your group is on a different platform, that's even worse.
Yep. It adds to the confusion.
Yeah.
The whole thing is kind of a mess. That's why things like WhatsApp and all of those have been created in order to solve that issue. If you can have one app that does everything on every platform, you'll be ahead of the game. The problem is WhatsApp is not secure or trusted.
Which is unfortunate because that's how it was originally billed until Facebook bought them.
Yeah. Until what?
Until Facebook bought
them. Yes, exactly right. Facebook owns them. Nobody trusts Facebook. That's the problem with Facebook's cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
You got to have trust for cryptocurrency. Yeah. Nobody trusts Facebook.
Not after what he's been through lately.
Right.
And, I mean, you know, the lawsuits and everything else, what they've got to pay quite a few fines.
Yeah. They had to pay a $5 billion fine. And that was, 4 weeks of revenue?
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah, exactly right.
Big deal.
$5 billion. No, we don't care. It's a drop in the bus. Like somebody saying to you, we're fining you a nickel. Right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why in the EU, the fines are a percentage of your revenue. They're not flat numbers like they are in the U.S.
Right.
And so Google's been hit with some really huge fines. They appeal them all, of course.
Right.
Everyone does. In fact, was it last quarter, Facebook in their quarterly report said that they had set aside $5 billion just in case this charge came. And then in this most recent quarterly earnings, they say, yeah, the charge came, and so we paid it. And their stock price went up because they'd already set the money aside, and it didn't hurt this quarter.
Yeah, exactly right. That is exactly right.
And it was only
ahead.
Yeah, it was only $5 billion. That's nothing.
It's nothing to them. That's a couple of weeks' worth of income. They don't care. They don't care. And, you know...
For a free service, that's a heck of a deal.
It is a heck of a deal.
Yeah.
And Zuckerberg has famously said privacy is dead, and he has proved it time and time again, at least from his point of view. And you know, when you own... when Facebook owns WhatsApp and what's the other thing they own? Instagram. They have you know
the world by the
world by the stuff and
short hairs.
They don't. I you know people say well yeah, but you do Google. I think Facebook is worse than Google. I truly do. You know I just I'm not saying Google is good. I'm saying Facebook is worse,
far worse.
Yeah. And so I don't do much
like
on
you
Facebook
say the
anymore.
Way that they get people's information and all those stupid quizzes and everything else.
Yep,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, stop people. Yeah. Stop doing Facebook quizzes. All they're doing is getting your information. Well, what's your elf name? Oh, it's your mother's maiden name and the name of the first dog you had. Should you notice that those are security questions that every bank in America asks you?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you shouldn't be giving that information to Facebook.
You think, folks? Yeah.
There's a movie on Netflix now called The Great Hack, which is a documentary about how the Cambridge Analytica hack through Facebook stole all our data during the election, how it was used to sway the election by foreign governments, and it's a real I just read about it. I got to watch it now.
Yeah.
They said it was a pretty good movie, and it will make you want to delete your Facebook account.
Yes. Well, I do Facebook on a separate browser from everything else because Facebook uses universal cookies, which look at everything you do.
And every other website has that Facebook like button on it.
And there are extensions you can add that will block that.
Yep.
And I have blocked them. I am this far from blocking Facebook on my browser. On my router.
Yeah, just put it in the DNS black hole list.
Black hole list for that, yeah. I haven't done it yet, but I'm this close. And those of you on the YouTube channel can see I'm this close. All right, that music tells me that we've wasted an hour of all our lives with this nonsense. But, oh, don't go away. None of us are smart enough to consider that a waste, and we'll all be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. And we will be here for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Grateful and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go away. I'll take a bio break, and then we will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before I even do this, I should probably talk about Thunder Drive, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
It looks like, and I just found this. I don't know anything else about it, okay? But right now, there seems to be a deal for a company called Thunder Drive at thunderdrive.io. You can't get the deal on their website, but Engadget has a deal thing for it. I'll put it up when I get a chance. Lifetime, 2 terabytes of storage, $59. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that's less than a 2 terabyte hard drive.
Exactly.
That is dirt cheap.
It is dirt cheap. If you only want to spend $29, you get the 500 gig. Yeah, exactly. But it
go big or stay home.
It looks like it ends in 6 days, according to this. And it's a site on deals.gadget.com, not Engadget, Engadget. So when I get a chance,
I've got it.
Oh, he's got it. Steve found it. Okay, he's gonna put that up. My recommendation has always, we talked about this last week with Peak Cloud, which is a little more expensive than this. I still got it.
We thought that was a great deal until we found a better deal.
Always something better coming out.
I'm going to do both.
Yeah.
Why not?
Because as I keep telling people, the more places
redundancy,
you have backup, the better off you are.
Yep.
So, and for 2 terabytes, I can put everything up there. All my
you can create everything. A routine to do one night and do the other night.
Well, I'm on a fast enough connection that I can do both at once. Thank you. I knew you would appreciate that.
92%.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well done.
Well, we're stuck because that means it's only going to be about a year before I get it,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Our neighborhood, matter of fact, just down the street from me.
Yeah. I know you can throw a stone at it in every direction.
Right across the street has it. My area is stuck at 70%, which I still don't understand. Since the new mapping, before they went to the new mapping system, we were at 72%. Now we're stuck still at 70%, and the people down the street by the bay are up to 72% already.
Yeah.
And like you said, yeah, I could run a wire across the street because my neighbors across the street, up and down the block, all have it.
You just need to find somebody with a
wireless
drone.
Because I add that to your cart,
yeah,
and then it shows you a 3 terabyte deal for $69.
Okay,
from another company. Yet
that's pretty interesting. Well, of course it's because it's gadget deals.
Yeah,
and they don't care who you get it from.
Yeah,
3 terabytes for what?
$69.
That's nice. $10 more for another terabyte. Yes, please. Probably you put that in your cart, you find another one.
You may get 50 terabytes
for free at some
point.
Add
to cart. There we go. Lifetime VPN for $39.
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
we have no way of knowing who these are. We don't endorse anything.
We do not endorse nor recommend using.
I did a bunch of research on P Drive before I bought that last week. I'll do a bunch of research on Thunder Drive before I buy that this week. I buy that this week.
10 terabyte for $100.
Lifetime?
Lifetime.
Wow.
Again, you got to check out the source.
Right. You got to know who you're dealing with.
They could sit there and take your money.
Well, yeah,
and run.
So the joke is whose lifetime? Well, of course, the lifetime of that company.
Or you. Yeah. Whichever comes first.
Yeah. Right. Oh, I'm sorry, our server went down. Bye.
Right. Yeah. All right, so Apple, again. You see a lot of Apple this week. That's bad because I don't generally report good stuff. Apple has long performed like clockwork, growing steadily and producing an ever growing stream of profit. Not anymore. On Tuesday, Apple said that its net income had fallen 13% and that its revenue only rose 1% in the latest quarter. See, raising is not good when you're Apple if it's single digits.
Yeah.
We made money. You didn't make enough money. We hate you. Oh, okay. iPhone sales, however, continue to decline, and gains in the company's services and wearables business fail to make up the difference. The results showed persistent signs of weakness for one of the world's financial standouts. Apple built its enormous business on the iPhone, but sales of the device have slipped for 3 straight quarters in a saturated smartphone market. Yet the results also suggested that the company could be starting to halt declines in those sales in other key areas, including revenue from the Chinese market. Over the previous 2 quarters, Apple's profits and revenue have fallen overall. Obviously, on the iPhone, we've gone through a period where we've seen some revenue declines, Luca Maestri, Apple's finance chief, said in an interview. But we are very excited about our product roadmaps, and we are very optimistic for the future. Mr. Maestri said Apple has slowed the bleeding of its iPhone business by offering financing, cutting prices in some countries, and starting a trade-in program for owners of older models after finding that people were keeping their iPhones longer. To be clear, most of this is not happening in the United States, so don't call me and tell me you couldn't find the deal. It's not happening here. For the first time since 2013, iPhone sales did not account for at least half of Apple's revenue. Customers are finding fewer reasons to upgrade their iPhones, analysts said, with newer models offering only incremental improvements. The trend could continue this year when Apple is likely to unveil a new slate of iPhones. The latest models expected in September are unlikely to work with the new 5th generation or 5G wireless technology that offers far faster download speeds than current service.
That isn't available anyway.
Right. Right. Apple is expected to have 5G phones for 2020, analysts said, you know, when we can actually get 5G. The other shrinking part of Apple's business has been in China. Sales in the region that included China fell nearly 25% over the previous two quarters, sparking a sell-off of Apple shares in January. Apple blamed the drop in part on economic weakness in China. So are you buying a new iPhone this year or not? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. People are keeping their phones longer.
Yeah.
You know, when a phone costs $1,000 flipping,
mm-hmm.
people aren't going to jump and buy. Well, the hipsters will. People who have no brains and a lot of money
will. The
ones that
have drank the Kool-Aid and got to have the latest and greatest, even though it's only, say, upping their camera a few pixel.
Right. Just to have. Well, one of the things we've seen in the past is that Apple people get really angry when the new model looks like the old model, so people don't know they have the new model.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jesus.
So now the new model has the bigger camera bump on the back because it's got three cameras now. That's this year's phone is three cameras. All the companies. Yeah.
And on the other hand, is nobody paying attention to the fact that Google couldn't make enough of the Pixel 3As and 3A XLs because they're only $400 or $500
mm-hmm.
for a phone that does 99% of what a $1,000 phone does? And they sold out of them, and they can't keep up with demand. Is anybody paying attention to that? No, because they want the $1,000 phone. If it costs you $200 to make a phone,
mm-hmm.
and you can sell that phone for $400 or $1,000, which one are you
going
to sell it for?
Which one are they going with? Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Keep my shareholders happy.
That's right.
And what we found over the years. You know, in the olden days, you used to be on a two-year contract, and you couldn't get a new phone for 2 years. But then when your contract was up, your price didn't go down like it should have.
Right.
So now when your two-year payment plan, it's still a two-year payment plan. It's not contract anymore. It's a payment plan.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When your payment plan is done, your price will go down. And you're thinking, oh, my price went down. Maybe I don't need a new phone and continue my payment plan.
That's exactly right. But that's how you hide it.
Yeah.
You know, you're spending a bucket load of cash, but because it only dribbles out at 30 or 40 bucks a month, you don't feel it as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the average phone price is about $100 per line, and you had a two-year contract. That's $2,400 you're paying for that phone.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Oh, and so, and the service, but you know, it's the phone.
Well, right, and how many, you're right. And so when you can get that same phone for half that price or less, people flocked to the Pixel 3A. But I don't know that anybody's learning that lesson. You know,
there's the new camera bump.
Yeah.
Three cameras.
And why do we? I don't know why we need three cameras. I'm sure we do.
Well, medium, you know, close, medium, and far.
Yeah.
Because nobody carries
a
camera.
It's a phone.
Nobody carries a camera anymore. Your smartphone has a better camera than most, you know, point and shoot pocket cameras.
And most people taking pictures are either spending 2 hours looking glamorous before they do it, or they're just taking quick shots while some drunk is throwing up. How much camera do you need for that one?
You can see every piece in the vomitus.
Yeah, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mark?
Oh, hi. I'm running an XPS Dell 8700 with a 256 SSD, and I installed a update on the Inspiron graphics card last week, and my machine failed to boot. So I got it to boot by removing all the other USBs except from the keyboard and the mouse. Now I'm making a recovery drive, and it wants to do a BIOS update, which is just hanging.
Yeah.
And my real question is, how do I replace the SSD, which has all the programs? I would like to put a 1 terabyte SSD in it and keep all my licenses and my software.
Well, that used to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had CDs of all the software with the license keys and everything else. Yeah. If you have the license keys recorded somewhere,
sometimes in the email from when you bought it electronically,
right?
Yeah,
you'll have that. But one of the things that I always recommend people do is create like a Google spreadsheet, so it's always in the cloud. You can always get to it.
Yeah.
Of all of your devices and all of their serial numbers.
But is there any other way? Is there a way just to mirror the SSD so it keeps all those?
Maybe. But the problem is you've got a damaged SSD. So if you mirror it, you're going to mirror the damage.
Yeah. Because before you could use an old program like Ghost.
Right. And there are programs that will do that. But the point is you're putting in the new one because the old one is kind of dead.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do a mirror, you'll move over all the kind of dead stuff.
Yeah, normally when an update fails, you can uninstall it. But when it's your video driver update that failed, you can't see the screen to uninstall.
Right.
You
well,
might
I've
be able to go into safe mode.
Yeah, I was going to say go into safe mode. That'll load just the basic video drivers. Yeah.
The other problem that you'll run into by putting a different hard drive in it is now Windows will think you stole it. You'll have to... use your Windows license key to call Microsoft to say, I didn't steal it. I just put a bigger hard drive in. In fact, many companies, Microsoft included, are now electronically storing your licenses in your online account so that you log back into your Microsoft account and it sees all your Windows and Office licenses. You log into your Adobe account and it finds all your Creative Suite licenses. So the companies are doing that because they know people don't keep their licenses themselves.
Right. Or if the machines die.
When the machine dies, yeah.
Right, which happens quite a bit.
So if you were logging into your Windows machine using a Microsoft username and password, Microsoft, generally it would be the email address, Microsoft email address,
yeah,
and password, then theoretically, if you put in that new hard drive and load Windows and log in with that, it will know that you have a license key for all that stuff.
Okay.
Theoretically.
So technically it's easy. You can copy the files. There's several imaging programs that can image it to the new drive. Then the problem happens with the licensing, and it depends on each company and who you've licensed it from, whether it's a physical license number you can type in or whether it's an electronic license that you have to log in to get to.
Okay.
Because the Windows will see it as a different computer because the hardware changed.
Yeah, now there are a number of programs that are available. Paragon is one. Drive Image, XML is another one.
Clonezilla is a
Macrium, EaseUS, and Clonezilla. And Clonezilla is free. So,
in fact, hard drives used to come with a cloning program because they were kind of expecting you to replace an old hard drive.
Right.
Not many of them do anymore.
Right. I am a big fan of Clonezilla, but it is a little harder to use than the others because it is a free program, and much of it happens at the command line rather than than graphically. But it works, and for novice users, there's a lot of documentation, step-by-step instructions for the common things like backing up and restoring an entire hard drive. And so if you're slightly advanced user, then you can use Clonezilla pretty nicely.
Okay.
But that's what you'll have to do and by the way, we recommend in general that if you are using Windows, you log in with a Microsoft username and password so that that sort of backing up will happen.
And it also helps if you forget your password, because then you can go on a different computer and reset it.
Right.
Right. Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
I guess it's we sort of asked for it by forgetting our license keys or losing the box the key came in. Companies have responded by making it an electronic license.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep it for you.
Well, that's
but now it's an electronic license, and you got to log into your account to get to it.
Well, that's like Nick was saying. Anytime it puts in any key code or anything else, I copy it, paste it into a Google spreadsheet, and it's there. And then that way, any of the programs that I've registered, I know, you know, if I happen to lose the case or, you know, whatever that it came in, no problem. I go up to this spreadsheet and there it is, and I can log that, you know, quick copy it, paste it into it, and boom, reinstall that particular program.
That's exactly right. I have a site book for most of my machines. I admit, now that I'm retired, I've gotten a little lazy on it. But in a site book, I put in everything I've done to the machine that's new and different. And if there's, of course, I'm mostly on Linux or Chrome, so I don't have a lot of license keys or any of that nonsense. So it's not as big a deal for me, but I put all that stuff in there. I've got all my serial numbers for all my hardware and what's in that machine for insurance purposes. I mean, it seems like an annoying thing to do, but if you keep it up to date all the time, it takes a minute a day, you know, mm-hmm. or a minute a month. It's not that big a deal once it's set up.
That's one thing with my Chromebook right upstairs. When I'm doing stuff with the ham radio, you know, I'll do different tweaks and all that. And you're doing so much, I admit, you forget stuff. So I've been making notes, more and more notes in the Google Notes. And it's saved my butt a couple times because I've gone ahead and made other changes. And all of a sudden, no, man, that made it worse.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, what did I originally do? So I go right back to my notes, and here's where it was, and it was working good. Bam. I've just gotten the habit because it's not hard to forget you're doing 16 different things, you know, multitasking. And it's like, that's why we tell folks, when you do it slowly, do one thing at a time, and make a note of it.
Yep.
Because if you got to go back, it's like, all right, what one? Because I made six changes, and which one really worked the best?
If you didn't, well, and that's just it exactly. You know, you made six changes.
Which one?
Right, because you'll remember one of the changes. What, is it the last one? Is it the best one?
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I've gotten to doing more and more notes and that type of stuff. It's just great help.
And what I like under Linux is there's a way to create what's called a package list. It's all the installed software on my machine.
Mm-hmm.
Not only can I create that package list, but I could also copy that package list to another machine and say, see all the packages in there? Put them on this machine.
Perfect.
And then bang, I've got a completely duplicated machine. Now, that's easy on Linux because everything is free. There's no license keys and all that other horse manure. But it means, and I have the package list update every night. So in case I install something during the day, by the time I back it up to all of my many cloud places, it's already been updated, and I can have that up there and sitting up there. And if I ever need to recreate that machine from scratch, all I have to do is download that, put it on that machine, and say, go.
Yeah.
And bang.
Well, Google makes it so simple. I just got this one package. Same thing. You know, they didn't give me one password. They gave me a whole list. There's got to be 20 of them for the different parts of this package that you're using.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, sure as God made green apples, I'd lose that list. So the first thing I did is I highlighted it all, put it over to a spreadsheet, and a couple times I've had to go back to it because I've had to reinstall it. Oh, I just quick pull it up. Yeah, that's it. Cut, paste, boom. It's done.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about, you know, oh, I got to put this over here in a safe spot because that safe spot gets lost.
I have a number of friends, and all of you will think I'm talking about you, and in fact, I'm talking about all of you, who keep notebooks of things. But the problem is you scratch this one out, you add this one, you put this one in, you forget to scratch that one out. Mm-hmm. Now you've got it in two places.
And it's on 16 different pages in the book because you changed it so often.
Right, yep. Right. By keeping it, the current ones.
In the one document.
In one document. And because it's Google, you can search for it. So if you put the name in one column and the password in another column. Or you can do it all in something like NPass or LastPass or that sort of thing. It's not just necessarily for passwords. Yeah. You can put your serial numbers. You can put anything you want.
Well, that's the thing. I've got the one spreadsheet, and I've got for certain items, you know, all the serial numbers. And then the next tab over, I've got different passwords in that that I need to install certain programs.
Right.
You got to have the key codes in that for that. So. Just makes it easier, just one sheet. And like you say, then I can do a search, and it'll go to that particular tab and find it.
Right. To be clear to everyone out there, we do not recommend actually using Google Sheets for private information because Google Sheets, while Google is very good at security, nobody is perfect. But having something encrypted like NPass or LastPass would be better. But if you don't want to go that route, then certainly... Having it on a spreadsheet somewhere is better than nothing, and having it on a spreadsheet in the cloud is much better than nothing.
We always appreciate it when customers bring their password book in when they get a new computer.
Right.
And conversely, it's frustrating when we ask, what's your password, and they say, oh, I don't have one. Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
You have many.
Right.
Well, we need your email password for this account, your email password for that account, your Microsoft password, your Adobe password, your Apple password, your Google password. Yeah.
Right.
Well, why can't they all be the same? Because when one company gets breached, you don't want the bad guy to have all your passwords.
It's exactly it. You need to be aware of those kinds of things. All right. We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Official WGMC contest rules are available online at www.jazz901.org.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Mark did from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hi. Good hot afternoon to you.
And the same to you.
gentlemen, about the serial numbers for software?
Yeah.
A lot of times, I think like 70-75% of my software, if you go into where the registration is, there's usually a copy of the serial number that you put in.
In the about box.
Right. Yeah, it's either in the about or sometimes help.
Right, but the problem is if your system is crashed and you're rebuilding it, you can't get at those serial numbers, so you better have them somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah, so everyone whose computer is still working, go find those numbers and write them down.
Exactly. It's a good thing to do if you don't have them written down, that you can go in and find them and get them copied somewhere. I kind of do what Dave does, but I keep them in a small text file on my computer, and then I usually print them out, and if I have software disks, they're in one of those CD envelope things.
Right.
And I leave it in there. If it's downloaded, I still put it on that list.
Right.
And I just put downloaded next to it, so I'm not going crazy looking for a disk.
Right, exactly right.
You know, that's really an easy way to keep things done. Of course, Google Docs is always easy because you always have access to it.
Right. Let me make another suggestion, a little tip for you. If you've downloaded a piece of software, add to that sheet the URL you downloaded it from so you can get back there fast.
Yeah, and some of them will give you a place to go to retrieve your serial number, and usually all it is an email address and a security question that you usually make up. It's not a predetermined one a lot
right.
of times, and it's pretty simple to get it back via email.
Right.
So and those are a couple little hints that you can do, especially before your system crashes.
Right. And remember, we recommend that you lie about the security questions.
Right. So especially when they're ones that they don't let you,
right,
you know, give yourself.
Right. What was the name of your first dog? Chicken Kiev.
Exactly.
Okay. Purple.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Your mother's maiden name. Black and blue, you know.
Right, right. Anything that is a complete and utter lie and has nothing to do with the actual question is the safest answer for a security question.
Exactly. I never use my real answers.
Good for you, Mark.
And never use my real birth date, none of that.
Right, right.
You know. And it's not that hard to remember if you're clever.
Right, exactly.
And
we all
know us listeners are clever.
Yes, we are. Okay, Soundbites listeners are the cleverest.
Have a
All
good
right.
one.
Thanks, Mark. You
yep.
too. Good advice from Mark. All right. So, here's one for you Google people. Google is adding an automated, I love this feature. Google is adding an automated text-to-speech feature to the phone app on Pixel devices and eventually on some other phones, enabling a one-tap system to relay location information to medical, fire, or police responders without the need for speech. The system is simple. When on an emergency call, the phone app now offers three additional buttons labeled medical, fire, or police. Tapping the button will activate a text-to-speech feature that will read out a message informing the operator that the caller is using an automated service, describing the kind of help the caller needs, medical, fire, or police help, and the caller's current location. Google says this new feature is designed for situations in which someone needs emergency services but cannot verbally communicate with an emergency call operator due to injuries, a dangerous situation, or a speech disability. It's an expansion of a feature Google added to its default phone app for Pixel devices back in 2017, which would automatically display a location card on the dialing screen when calling an emergency number like 911 to make it easier to relay that information to responders directly from the phone app. The new text-to-speech system, however, makes it even simpler by cutting out the need for the person in an emergency situation to be able to read out that information at all. The new feature is set to roll out to Pixel devices in the U.S. in the coming months, with select Android devices set to get it, too. What do you think of this feature? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I think that would be really slick.
I've seen a demonstration of it, and when you dial, obviously don't dial 911 on your phone looking for it. If you have a Pixel device, you'll be getting it shortly, and then eventually after that, select Android devices, and they don't say which those are at this point. But what happens is you dial 911 on your phone, and up comes this the phone, and you're talking to a person just like you normally do, but there's also three extra buttons on the phone: medical, fire, and emergency.
Huh.
And when you press one of those, it cuts out your voice. You can keep talking if you want to, and it says this is an automated response. The person who has called is unable to tell you the problem, but we need an ambulance or fire truck or the police at, and here's the address and the location and all the information.
So is this an app we're going to have to install?
No. It's going to be an update to the phone app. I got an update to my phone app yesterday, but I'm not going to call 911 just to see what I got.
Yeah, no, what I'm curious about, though, is I wouldn't want it on my main screen. Just in case you accidentally hit it?
Well, but it doesn't do anything really different. It doesn't... The idea is if you're talking to somebody, you get you're still talking to them.
No, what I'm saying is
and you can cancel it if you hit it accidentally.
Things get moved around.
But the idea is there was a story about the woman who called the police and ordered a pizza, and luckily the 911 operator was smart enough to say, are you in a dangerous situation and you cannot talk to us? Yes. Would you like us to send the police? Yes, please. With cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked out real well because they had a fairly
smart. Oh, yeah. No.
So in that situation now, you don't even have to do that. You can dial the phone, hit the number, and you can put the phone down.
Yeah.
And it'd be really cool if the cops did show up with a pizza.
With a pizza. It'd be nice. It would be very nice.
With a bag of donuts.
Well, actually, yeah, they could. Well, they may have with the pizza delivery jacket on and then ring the doorbell. It's the pizza I ordered. And then the bad guy is caught off guard.
Exactly. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, so that's I think that's a lovely feature. And, of course, that all has to do with Google's natural speech business, the Duo app, if you've played with that, that will make appointments for you and everything else, and people don't know they're talking to a computer.
Well, I like on my the 3A here that I've got. When a new phone call comes in, it's got this little button, you know, because it knows it's could be a spam call, which most of them are. You can sit there and hit preview.
Mm-hmm.
Without answering it, it's sitting there, and you can do a response, and then you can just sit there and block it.
Yep.
But I love it. It's sitting there.
I had a customer the other day who somehow accidentally managed to turn on his call ID blocking. So whenever he called his wife, it didn't say who it was.
Right.
And she thought it was another spam call. So he was
she
wondering.
She deleted him.
Well, yeah. He was wondering why she never answered his phone calls. Is there something I should know about, honey?
Yeah, right.
He better sleep with his eyes open.
And that was another one. There's like 16 steps to go through to turn off, to turn your call ID
on. Yes. How do you do some of this stuff accidentally? I get that it happens. I see it happen all the time. But it is a 16-step process. How did you do that accidentally? At what point did you turn your brain off and just randomly, did you think it was a piano?
At least there's some order in the piano.
Right.
Keys, yeah.
Right. But yeah, we see it all the time. And it's, you know, clearly it is what it is. And that's one of the things that Google is working on their new phones. Remember, we don't talk about rumors here because rumors are just so many horse apples. They're
all probably true. You don't know what's going to ship out of all the prototypes they've made.
Right. But Google has announced that they will, in fact, have something called Soli, S-O-L-I, in the new phones. And that's essentially a little radar system. So you can do gestures to your phone. So you don't even have to touch it. So your phone could be sitting probably on a stand propped up so that the Soli sensor is looking at you. But then you can do gesture things. I don't know what they are. Sign language, rude Italian street gestures. I don't know what they be. But the point is you will be able to do gestures to your phone and get it to do things. So maybe that'll cut down on some of that butt dialing if you can just set it up in the corner and point at it.
Somebody has a commercial like that now where their hands are all greasy or sticky from baking something and they want to go to the next page and there's a gesture that goes to the next page in the recipe.
Right, right.
I forget. I love these commercials. They're a great commercial. I have no idea whose product it was, but the commercial was great.
But the commercial was great, and that's the important thing. So, yeah, we're theoretically seeing that in the next version of the Pixel phone.
Wasn't there a leak on the Pixel? There was some blog site that was talking about the Pixel rumors, and so Google tweeted back, here's a picture of the phone?
Yes, because they were completely accurate.
Yeah.
The rumors they had were completely accurate.
There's so much interest in this phone. Here's a picture. Well, you mean the one that's not coming out for 8 months?
Yeah, right. Well, and that's just it. Like I said, we don't talk rumors because most of them are nonsense. And Steve is right. They probably actually had something on one of the prototypes that was that thing. Doesn't mean it's going to hit production. But this is a leak. I guess you can still call it a leak. From Google themselves.
Yeah.
They ought to know what's going to be in their next phone. So it will have three cameras on the back and have that bump. And it's going to have this Soli thing on it, SOLI, for those of you who are following that sort of thing. And I hope it's not IMSOL as there much it as it is
from
SOLI.
The Made by Google link.
Right.
Well,
right.
There seems to be some interest, so here you go. Can't wait to see what to do with it.
Right. There's all kinds of new things coming out on the thing across the top. Here's what makes me a little more, well. So here's this thing. There's going to be a face unlock.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's okay. There's going to be a front-facing camera and ambient light sensor and audio port, the Soli chip, as they're calling it, the Soli radar chip. And there's going to be a face unlock dot projector. So it's going to be one of those deals that projects a bunch of dots on your face and then figures out what your face is from the dots.
That's what Apple uses now.
Right. There's also an IR camera being infrared. It means that it knows if you're a picture, a mask, or an actual face. And the face unlock flood illuminator for whatever that's about.
That was always the joke about in the movies where they cut somebody's finger off to use the fingerprint. Well, that won't work because it's not warm anymore.
Right. So now they put it on their own finger, which is no thank you.
Yeah.
Do not want to be that person. But yeah, so we'll see. And it's the Soli thing is essentially radar. Apparently, it's just a tiny little chip with radar in it. And of course, that means there's now a brow, that top bezel on the phone. And
notch?
No, there's no notch. It goes all the way across.
Yeah.
And I don't understand this whole thing about notches. It's like saying, "Oh, those are not Jimmy Choo shoes. They get me where I'm going, and they keep my feet from."
But getting... look at all that space that could be a screen.
I don't care.
Yeah. There's one, Rene Ritchie from iMore kept wanting to call it the horns because he was looking at it from the other side.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
So the horns that go up instead of the notch in the middle.
Yeah, right. Yeah, think of it as extra screen space you got on either side of that bezel as opposed to a notch that gets into your screen space. But yeah, I don't, that's just nonsense, pretentious horse apples, as I've been calling them lately. And I don't think that's at all, useful for anybody. Oh, it's got a big notch, you got a big chin. I like having a big notch or a big chin because it means I got somewhere to hold the phone that I'm not accidentally going to do some damage to the thing.
Well, as we talked last week, Google's next big phone after the 4. Well, you know, will definitely be the 5, but the one feature that they've got to add to that is make it a little thicker and give me more DD battery life.
Give me more battery life.
Everybody, I don't know of anybody, whether it's iPhone, Android, Samsung, you name it, any phone out there, that somebody would complain about more battery life.
Yep.
If anything, that is thing they're starving for.
I'd really like to see that happen in the Pixel 4a. You know, the $400 version of
that would be sweet. Give me a few millimeters thicker and give me more battery life.
More battery life. How do you beat that? That's the
big
thing.
Well, like I say, that would be because they're always trying to find, like we said last week, they're always trying to be innovative and find other features that would drive people to their particular phone.
Right.
That, I swear, would be the number one feature that everybody would definitely not complain about and want in the worst way, because the way more, you know, all the advertisements that you see, do more and do this and do that because of your high-speed internet, and it doesn't matter what company, well, you're going to need battery life to do that. If you're streaming video or listening to this or watching that, hello, your phone's going to die faster doing that.
That's right. Well, and it's Apple who started that with the, it must be thinner. Everyone has to be thinner. Every new phone has to be thinner. And then they have bend gate and they have a flex gate or whatever they called it. And then they have people complaining about the fact that the phone life is terrible. And what do you expect?
Yep.
When you start taking away the size, when you make the battery smaller, it lasts less time and you get less battery life and you have more problems. I don't see how you don't understand that.
It's like in the 50s, all the cars started adding fins because all the cars had fins. So we better make all the cars have fins. And then fins are the new hotness. And then, you know, by the late 60s, early 70s, we didn't want fins anymore.
We didn't want fins anymore. All right. And because it made it harder to jump across the trunk like Starsky and Hutch.
So maybe this thin craze will peter out in a few years.
I certainly hope so. I wish it would peter out last year. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, a quick question on the Windows, you know, the user interface. When you're looking at lists of files and folders like you used to have in the file manager, when you look at just folders, why can't you see the size of the folder? You only see the size of files when you go into the folder and look at the files themselves.
I think you can right-click on them.
And do properties, yes, yeah, but
sure,
one at a time.
On it, but I'd like to see a whole, when I look at a list of folders, let's say on a drive, I'd like to see right next to that how big that folder is.
It takes a little bit of calculation and processing power to do that, so it's generally off by default. On the Mac, there is an option where you can turn on and calculate folder sizes, and you can see how slow it is to go through all the nested folders.
Yeah.
There is a third-party program called TreeSize that I like that will size either a single directory or the entire hard drive if you want.
Right. Now, if you went into the equivalent, I think what they call it now, the equivalent of a DOS, where you can actually go into the command line, if you do a list or a DIR, let's say, on that, would you see the file size at that point?
Generally not, no.
Well, even then you wouldn't.
Again, and it's because of what Steve says, that takes a lot of processing power and extra time, and therefore, you know, if you've ever taken a look at a folder that has gigabytes of and thousands of files in it, even when you look at it with properties, you see it counting up, and it takes a while.
Yes, it does.
Imagine that happening for every folder every time you open up.
Okay, I see.
And that's why they don't do it.
There is a third-party program I just found called Folder Size Explorer. And it looks like the regular file manager, but it will also calculate the size of your folders.
Yeah, because I'm trying to get rid of extraneous files that I don't need. I'd like to do a quick, you know, perusal to see what's big and what's worthwhile trying to eliminate.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so I use TreeSize for that.
Okay.
Because it does an on-demand scan. And even on the Mac, where you can turn on the folder sizes, because that takes so long, I use another program called OmniDisk Sweeper on the Mac to do a one-time scan of all the folders.
Right, and the program you're looking for is called TreeSize.
You said what?
TreeSize. T-R-E-E.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. S-I-Z-E.
Okay. Well, that's good. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yeah, so that the TreeSize gives you a tree, tree, with all the sizes. You may want to look at Folder Size Explorer. I'm going to put a link for that up, too. Because it looks more like the file explorer that you're used to.
Right. All right, that music tells me that we've reached the end of another show as we close in on our 30th anniversary show in about a month. And we want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I should probably thank Steve Ray, so I will. Thanks, Steve. I'm a nice guy.
You're very welcome.
There you go. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. So get up your questions, get them together, and we'll be checking them out next week. But in the meantime, have a good week. And for Pete's sake, be good to each other, will you? We will see you in just 166 hours.
Jazz 90.1.